and it was like a cord formed between Castile and me, connecting us. It wasn't always like that, so singular. Sometimes crowds overwhelmed me and pulled me in. Some people were projectors, their anguish so deep and raw that they formed the connection with me without trying. With Castile, it took a few seconds for me to process what I was picking up from him. Emotions had a certain taste and feel to me, and what I felt now was both tart and tangy in the back of my mouth. Discomfort and sadness. His sorrow was familiar. It was always there, shadowing his every step, every breath. I often thought about how he could laugh and tease, how he could be so ridiculously vexing while feeling such grief. I wondered if the teasing and his all-too-easy laughter were also masks, because I knew his pain started and probably ended with his brother. I didn't know what the discomfort was tied to, but I didn't feel anything that made me think he wasn't telling the truth now. And maybe that meant the name Hawk was real, that it wasn't a lie. The next breath I took felt thin. Why are you telling me this about your name? Why does it matter? He was quiet now, his features smoothing out. Because knowing that Hawk is part of my name, a part of me, matters to you. Can you read minds? I asked, thinking I'd probably asked that before, but I felt like I needed to ask again. Mind reading couldn't be too far-fetched, considering he could force his will upon others, and especially since what he said was true. It did matter to me. Why? I had no idea. Because what did it change? At the end of the day, nothing. A faint grin appeared. No, I cannot. Which is a disappointment when it comes to you. I would love to know what you're thinking, what you're really feeling. Thank the gods he didn't know, because what I was feeling was messier than when I attempted to knit. I am Hawk, he said after a moment, and I am Castile. I'm not two separate people, no matter how badly you want to believe that. I tensed, my grip tightening around the handle of the knife. I hated how well he knew me. I know that. Do you really? A rush of frustration scorched my skin, because I did often think of him as two different people, but mainly that they were simply different masks he wore, and there'd been one for Hawk. But it didn't matter. It couldn't. I know you are the same, I said. You are the one who lied to me from the beginning, and you're the one who's holding me captive now. It doesn't matter what name you used while doing it. He arched a dark eyebrow. Yet, you haven't called me Hawk since you learned who I was. The frustration quickly flamed into anger. And why does that matter, Hawk? A smile crept across his lips then, one that showed the barest hint of fangs. Because I miss hearing you say it. I stared at him for what felt like a small eternity. You're ridiculous, Castile. He laughed, and the sound was warm and deep and real. I felt his amusement through the connection, a sprinkling of sugar on my tongue. That almost angered me enough to do something very reckless with the knife yet again. Somehow I managed to resist the impulse that proved just how violent I could be. His humor faded. I haven't lied to you since you learned who I was. How am I to believe that? I demanded. And even if you haven't, that doesn't erase those lies. You're correct. I don't expect you to believe, nor do I expect you to ever forget those lies, he said. Again, through the connection I had left open, I felt sadness with the fading taste of humor. But I have nothing to gain from lies now. I have what I want. You. You do not have me. One side of his lips curled up.
We'll have to agree to disagree on that.
Ask me something, Princess. Ask me anything, and I will tell you the truth. 100
different questions arose. There was so much I could ask him.
2 things dominated. Did you ever care for me? Was any of it real?
I wouldn't ask those questions again.
And I'm just supposed to believe you?
Whether or not you do is up to you.
It wasn't just a question of me choosing to believe him, but I didn't point that out. There was another question that rose to the forefront, something I'd been thinking about earlier. Did you kill the first maiden? I asked.
What?
Surprise filled his tone, and I also felt it through the cord, cool, like a splash of ice water. I told him what the Duchess had claimed about the first maiden's abilities. She said that the maiden had been unworthy, even though she was still to be given to the gods, but her decisions and choices led her to the Dark One, to you, just like me. The Duchess basically said that the Dark One killed her.
I don't know why the Duchess would tell you that. The only maiden I have met is you, he answered.
And I felt the hot, acidic burn of anger radiating from him.
I don't even know if there truly was another maiden.
I had not considered the possibility that there had been no other maiden. That could explain why there was nothing written about her, not even a name. But for her to not exist at all?
I have a lot of blood on my hands, Poppy. Sometimes so much that I don't think they'll ever be clean. So much that I don't know if I ever want them to be.
My gaze shot to his.
And I'm sure you've heard a lot about me. About the Dark One. Some of it is true.
I kill the Ascended every chance I get. In Chalcedonia and in every city I've visited. And yes, I do find unique ways to end their lives. I am drenched in their blood.
Skin chilled. I was unable to look away.
You were responsible for Goldcrest Manor, Lord Everton?
Lord Everton was not alive when I left the City of Three Rivers, nor were any of the mortals who aided him when it came to his penchant for feeding on young boys, a predilection that went beyond that. And as I'm sure you've realized, some mortals know the truth, and they helped to cover what happened in the temples and what they did when there was no right.
I'd figured that the Ascended had help. They had to. The priests and priestesses in the temples had to know. The mistresses of the keeps and those who served the Ascended closely.
And I'm sure you heard the rumor that my affair with Lady Everton is what allowed me to enter the manor,
he said. I had heard that.
I will admit that I've used every weapon I have. After all, the Ascended taught me that.
I flinched.
She was known for her affairs. Servants helped to sneak her lovers inside the manor. Many never left, but I made sure she saw me. Eventually, she invited me to her bed, and that was how I gained entry. But I did not lay a finger on her in that way. Never.
There was a low rumble in his tone.
And if she hadn't run as the flames began, she wouldn't have escaped, either.
I didn't doubt that for one second. Tipping forward, he held my stare.
It's not just the Ascended that stain my hands. There are innocents, mortals and descendants of Atlanteans alike, caught between what I want and me. Your god, Rylan, was one of those.
My throat tightened.
As were the ones who traveled here with us, and countless others, each by arrow, poison, or fall. Anything that stood between you and me.
He didn't look away, not for one second.
And Victor, those ladies at the right, I didn't kill them, But you were right. Those who support me acted on their own. But they did so inflamed by my words, urged by my lead. So their blood is on my hands too. I should have taken ownership of that from the first moment.
A shudder worked its way through me, one of pain and sorrow.
Does any of it stain your soul?
I whispered.
Much of it does. He sat back. But this maiden is not part of that. If she did live, and she was like you, part Atlantean, and shared your gifts or something similar, she wasn't given to the gods. She was most likely used in the same way they planned to use you.
The breath that left me was ragged.
If they've had your brother, why would they have needed her?
He eyed me from his chair.
Atlanteans need Atlantean blood to survive. One who is only half Atlantean can provide the necessary sustenance. That was how I was kept alive.
I swallowed thickly, hurting for him, despite everything.
Hurting for her, a woman I didn't even know, wasn't even sure existed.
She could have been held captive to
feed him? To keep him alive?
Without Atlantean blood, we don't die, he said.
I frowned. How could you not survive but still live?
Because what we become is not something I would compare to being alive, he answered.
Before I could question that, he spoke. If there was a first maiden, she was either keeping my brother alive, or she was used in the same manner as he is.
Possibly both, but either way, I imagine that she has long since perished.
What you should be asking is why they need you. Why would they make you the maiden, keep you closeted away, under their protection and under their ever-watchful gaze? Why did they wait until now for your ascension?
He spat out the last word.
Earlier, after the Craven, you were right about why they forced you to stay quiet about being bitten and told you never to use your abilities. Someone could have discovered what you were, and that would have brought their entire house of bones down on them. So, why did they wait so long and take that risk?
Please tell me that you've asked yourself these questions.
My skin chilled. I have. They want to use me to make more vampires.
But why? They have...
And why do you think they've waited this long? He repeated.
Why did this supposed first maiden conveniently disappear around the same time her abilities began to grow? There is no ascension for you. The gods require no service. They waited so you could be useful to them.
He sat forward.
There's a reason the ascended wait until a certain age to ascend. Do you know what happens when an Atlantean reaches the age of 19?
I did. I'd read about it in the history of the War of Two Kings and the Kingdom of Solus.
The answer had been in that damn book I'd been forced to read 100 times, probably the only part that was true.
An Atlantean reaches a state of maturity. You call it the culling, when they go through physical changes.
And when certain other abilities begin to manifest or strengthen for some.
He added, his eyes bright in the dimly lit room.
For me, it was compulsion. As a child, I could be somewhat persuasive, but once I went through the culling, I could force my will onto another if I wished.
A hollowness spread to my stomach.
Then, why haven't you just made me go along with whatever it is you wish for me to do?
His brows furrowed together.
Because I may be a monster, but I'm not that kind of monster, Poppy.
There was a catch in my chest as I looked away from him.
Besides, compulsions are temporary, only useful for immediate gains, he said.
When I looked at him again, his expression had smoothed out.
And, interestingly,
Just like you can't pick up on emotions from the Ascended, compulsions do not work on them either. I cleared my throat. Do you know why? Some believe it's because they have no soul. I thought of Ian, and then shut those thoughts down. So you think my abilities are changing because I'm going through the culling? A version of it, yes. Your blood wouldn't have been useful to them until you at least hit 19, even if your abilities took the next 2 years to morph. As I processed what he was telling me, my brain went in one direction. Will I develop fangs? He lifted his brows. Doubtful. Half Atlanteans don't need blood, so they don't need fangs. What about immortality? Would you not want that? I thought of the Ascended, of how long they lived, and I wasn't sure their lack of humanity was due to what they did to survive or because they lived to see everyone around them die several generations over. I don't know, I answered honestly. Will I? He shook his head. Only full-blooded Atlanteans have what mortals would think of as immortality. I wasn't sure if I should feel relieved or not. Can I even ascend, then? Be made into a vampire? I asked, thinking of Ian. If he were part Atlantean like me? I honestly don't know, Poppy. It is forbidden for any Atlantean to ascend anyone with a drop of mortal blood in them. Even the half-Atlanteans that live in Atlantia are not ascended. They live and die just like mortals. He explained. And that was something I didn't know about those who lived in Atlantia. That not all Atlanteans were like him. I would imagine a half-Atlantean going through an ascension would be the same as a mortal. They would become a vampire. Meaning, they would be ruled by bloodlust, just not as consumed by it as a craven. Pressure settled in my chest. When a person is turned, made vampire, what happens to them? He was quiet for several moments before he said, They are fed upon by other vampires, brought to the brink of death by blood loss, and then fed blood from an Atlantean. Sometimes the change is immediate, other times they can appear dead for hours. But they wake up and they are hungry, as uncontrollable as a craven. It often takes several ascended to subdue them. His jaw worked as his gaze shifted to the fire. Even after being fed, they're consumed by hunger. I've heard that it can take weeks, sometimes months, for a newly made vampire to control his or her thirst. A sinking sensation threatened to pull me through the floor. There had been a space of time after Ian's ascension that I hadn't heard from him. It was when he'd married, and it had been months. And I know that for those who could not abide by what was now needed of them, they ensured that they would not harm another. He added quietly. How? I asked, instinct telling me that the answer wasn't going to be an easy one. They choose to walk when the sun is at its highest. It doesn't take long, but it is not quick by any means. Nor is it painless. Oh, gods. Now that sounded like something Ian would do. But he was alive. He'd been sending letters. He had to be alive. I swallowed. Those you saw turned. Did all of them seem aware of what was happening? His gaze shifted back to me. I know where you are going with this, and I don't think the answer will change things in the way you wish. Will you just answer the question? His lips thinned. The Ascended held a ceremony for it. Mortals were brought in dressed in robes and wearing masks. Meaningless words were chanted, and candles were lit. Some seemed to know what would occur. Most appeared intoxicated. I had no idea if they knew exactly what was happening.
His chest rose with a deep breath.
Some seemed drugged. I doubt they even knew if they were awake.
I stared at him, stuck in this terrible place between relief and horror. Suddenly, I understood why he hadn't wanted to answer the question. If Ian had been drugged to the point where he hadn't been aware, if others hadn't been aware of what was happening, well, that was far worse.
Castile watched me silently. There is no reason for an ascended to turn a half-Atlantean. Doing so would taint the blood, the pot they need to either turn other ascended or to keep an Atlantean alive. That is why they made sure you were healthy and safe, why your precious queen cared so tenderly for you, he said.
My entire body went as taut as a bowstring.
Your blood meant nothing to them before now, and it would mean even less to them if you went through the ascension.
So, Ian and I likely had different parents, either one or both, because he had to have been turned. He'd been writing me letters, and Castile claimed that Ian had only been seen at night, unless Castile's contacts had seen someone else, and it hadn't been Ian sending those letters at all. The pressure inside me increased, shifting to my stomach as I swallowed thickly. I couldn't even consider any of that right now, while I was so far from Ian. The questions and the doubts would crush me, and I already felt crushed. I knew what they'd planned for me before, but to fully understand why they'd waited, why they did everything they had done, it sickened me to the point where I feared I might actually become physically ill. They were only keeping me alive until they... I choked on my words as the weight of them threatened to crush me. Castile said nothing as he sat there, though that was probably for the best at the moment. I felt like a powder keg that had been lit. Inside me, disbelief and anger sparked. I'd been kept sheltered and virtually caged, cared for like some prized cattle until my blood had aged. Until it was useful, either to make more vampires or to keep another alive to continue making more. I'm not a bottle of wine, I whispered.
No, he said quietly. You are not a bottle of wine, Poppy.
My head jerked up.
And you didn't know this when you came for me. You swear right here and now that you didn't know I was part Atlantean, that this is why they made me the maiden. That I was being kept alive and sheltered from everything until I was useful.
His gaze met mine.
I swear to you, Poppy, I had no idea that you were Atlantean until I tasted your blood. I didn't even expect that was what you were when I learned of your gift. Maybe I should have.
A shadow crossed his features, gone so quickly I wasn't even sure I had seen it.
But no Atlantean has been capable of such a thing for, well, for hundreds of years. I didn't know.
My senses were still open, and it took several moments to filter through what I felt to even make sense of his emotions. There was still the acidic taste of anger, the tart flavor that I associated with uncertainty, and the sadness that always lingered within him.
My gift wasn't a lie detector by any means. But I didn't think he was lying.
Pulling my gift back was the hardest part because that didn't feel natural. What did was going to him and taking away the sadness, giving some temporary peace. My skin tingled with the desire to do just that, and it wasn't necessarily because it was him. The gift demanded to be used to heal. I wrestled it back, exhaling raggedly as I sat on the edge of the bed.
Now that you fully understand why they have done what they have done to you, and what they plan, Castile said,
his voice hardening in a way I rarely heard when he spoke with me.
Why in the hell would you want to run back to them, Poppy? Marriage to me or not?
I stared at Castile, the meat knife loose in my hands. I told you earlier I wasn't running back to them.
Then where were you running to? With no supplies, I might add.
You don't need to add that. I'm well aware of what I left here with.
If you weren't going back to the Ascended, where did you think to go? You were heading toward Whitebridge, to the south.
His eyes were like shards of amber.
You weren't going back to Macedonia.
I figure you were going to the capital.
Why? Even knowing what you did then, why would you do that?
Why? Anger flashed through me, hot and bright like the flames.
Are you seriously asking that question again?
Do I look like I'm joking?
He asked. I was stunned into silence, but only for a moment.
Why would I stay here and let you turn me over to them? To the people you told me wanted to use me? To the people who abused and tortured you? Who are doing that to your brother? How does that make you any better? Safer? You're doing the same thing they did to me.
The back of my throat burned as a knot of ugly, painful emotion lodged there.
You're keeping me safe, well-fed, and caged until you can use me.
A muscle flexed in his jaw.
And then you announce that you're going to marry me.
I shook my head, trembling.
What in the world would make you even say such an offensive thing?
Offensive? Come now, Poppy. I know deep down that you must be excited. Not everyone gets to become an actual princess.
I am not remotely... I snapped my mouth shut, realizing he was actually teasing me.
Was this all some grand joke to him? It's considered a great honor in Atlantia to be welcomed into the bosom of the noble ruling family, he went on. I think my mother is going to like you.
I shot to my feet.
We are not getting married, slamming the knife down. It scored deep into the wood of the table by the bed, the handle vibrating from the impact.
On second thought, my mother is definitely going to like you,
Hawk murmured. And right then, he was Hawk. That was the bemused tone I was all too familiar with, and it threw me enough that it took a few moments to recover, to remember that it was simply another mask.
Why? Because I didn't throw it at your face this time?
She'll most likely be amused to hear that you've done exactly that,
he said, and my brows knitted.
And she will be happy to know that you are capable of showing restraint.
Now I wish I hadn't shown restraint.
Castile chuckled, and that too sounded so familiar. But it was Castile's laugh that faded. It was his golden eyes that held an intense look of fascination. He was both Hawk and Castile, but it was the latter that I now dealt with. He leaned forward in his chair, lowering both bare feet to the floor.
You are so incredibly beautiful when you're angry.
I refused to be flattered by that somewhat weird compliment.
And you are so incredibly disturbed.
Been called worse.
I'm sure you have.
I folded my arms across my chest. He rose from the chair, and for a moment I got a little lost in all the bronze skin on display.
We'll talk tomorrow about our future.
There is no future to talk about. We're not marrying,
I cut in.
I think you'll find my reasonings impossible to refuse.
Nothing is impossible.
We'll see.
No, we...
What are you doing? I demanded as he walked to the other side of the bed.
What are you doing?
Going to bed.
Why?
My voice pitched high. He arched a brow as he pulled the blanket aside.
To go to sleep?
I figured that out, thanks. But why do you think you get to sleep in the same bedchamber, let alone the same bed, with me?
Because, as I explained earlier, this is my bedchamber.
Then I will find another room.
There are no other rooms available, Princess.
My hands dug into the blanket as my mind raced.
This isn't appropriate. I'm the maiden. Or was. Whatever. I'm the definition of appropriate.
He stared at me.
Besides the fact that you're not the definition of appropriate, everyone in this keep knows that we've already shared a bed, Poppy.
Well, that's just...
My face burned.
That's just great!
I'm not leaving you alone.
I'm not going to try to escape. I promise.
I hope you don't think I'm foolish enough to trust your vow.
Castile picked up a rather flat pillow and fluffed it.
So, either it's me in here, or it's Kieran. Would you rather it be him? If so, I will summon him for you.
He tossed the pillow toward the head of the bed.
But just so you know, he often slips into his wolven form and has a habit of kicking in his sleep.
My lips slowly parted.
What? Wait, I don't need an explanation of that. I don't want Kieran.
The hint of a smile was pure wickedness.
You want me.
That is not what I said. You can sleep on the floor.
I am not sleeping on the floor. And before you say it, neither are you.
He slipped into bed with enviable grace.
No matter what you think you know of me, I hope you realize that I would never force myself on you. Nor would I compel you to do something like that. I won't ever do something you don't want from me. And that's not just because I know what it feels like,
he said flatly, and my heart squeezed.
It's because I've never been that kind of person.
I don't think you would do something like that, I said quickly. And I didn't want to know. I needed to know. What did they do to you?
That's not something I really want to get into, Poppy.
I opened my mouth and then closed it. I could understand that, respect it. And as I remained where I was, I thought about what Kieran had said earlier about me being safe with the prince. Unfortunately, I also remembered the effects of his blood and how I all but begged him to touch me. Not one of my finer moments. Castile had refused, though. He could have easily taken advantage of the situation, but what had he said? That he wasn't a good man, but that he was trying to be one. I thought of the shame I had felt inside him. He was both the villain and the hero, the monster and the monster slayer. But I wasn't afraid of him trying something with me. I was more afraid of myself, scared of how much my heart was pounding. The night we'd been together, falling asleep in his arms had been just as beautiful as what we'd shared before that. Only it hadn't been real. The problem was that my heart didn't seem to understand that, at least not all the time. That was why it was pumping so fast now. To some, probably to most in the kingdom, sleeping beside someone didn't mean much of anything. But to me, it was as life-altering as holding hands, being able to openly touch another, or sharing dinner with someone, things other people often took for granted. That was why sharing a bed with Castile was dangerous. I watched him let the blanket fall to his waist, and then fold his hands under his head. Once he appeared comfortable, he said,
"But just so you know, if you want my lips on any piece of you, I'm more than willing to appease you."
My mouth dropped open.
"And my willingness to comply extends to my hands, my fingers, and my cock."
"Oh my gods," I cut him off. "You don't have to worry about that. I will never request your services."
"Services?"
He tipped his head toward me.
"That sounds so dirty."
I ignored that comment.
"You and I are never going to do anything like what we did before."
"Never?"
"Never." "Would you say it would be impossible?"
"Yes, it's definitely impossible." Hawk smiled then. And it was Hawk's smile. Dimples appeared in both cheeks, and I hated the catch I felt in my chest upon seeing them.
loathed that it made me see him as Hawk.
But didn't you just say nothing was impossible?
He all but purred. I stared down at him, at an absolute loss for words.
I want to stab you in the heart right now.
I'm sure you do,
he replied, closing his eyes. Whatever, I muttered, accepting that I would have to deal with him, at least for the night, or until I figured out how to escape. I scooted back, shoving my legs under the blanket. I threw myself down with enough force that it shook the bed.
You okay over there? Sounds like you could have hurt yourself.
Shut up! He laughed. With my back to him, I stared at the knife. The blade was bent. I sighed. A moment later, there was a click, and the room darkened. He'd turned off the oil lamp by his side of the bed.
His side of the bed? We didn't have sides!
I tugged the blanket to my chin as I shifted my focus to the fireplace. My mind wandered back to something that shouldn't matter but did.
Why did you tell me? I whispered, not even sure if he was still awake or why I was asking.
He'd already answered.
Why did you have to tell me that Hawk was your middle name?
The fire crackled, spitting sparks, and I closed my eyes. Seconds, maybe minutes later, Castile said,
because you needed to know that not everything was a lie.
Chapter 7. With all the stress and trauma of the last several days, it shouldn't have come as a surprise that the past found me in my sleep. Still, it was a shock to the senses. Blood was everywhere, splattered against the walls, running down them in thin rivulets, and pooling along the dusty wooden floor. Under the lumps on the floor, misshapen and not right, the air was thick with the scent of metal. A smear of blue in the lamplight caught my gaze. A shirt. Hadn't the funny man who'd served our food that evening been wearing a blue shirt? Mr. Lacoste? He told us stories about the family of mice that lived in the barn out back, who'd made friends with the kitties. I'd wanted to see them, but Papa had taken us back to our rooms. He hadn't been smiling or laughing at dinner. He hadn't since we left. He'd sat at the table, his gaze darting to the window in between every quick bite of food. But Mr. Lacoste's chest and stomach looked strange to me as I stood there, trembling. No longer round, it was sunken, jagged.
Don't look, Poppy. Don't look over there, came Mama's hushed voice as she pulled on my hand. We must hide. Hurry.
She pulled me down the narrow hallway, her hand wet against mine.
I want Papa.
Shh, we must be quiet. Her voice shook, sounding too thin. The arms of her dress were torn, the pale pink streaked with crimson. Mama was hurt, and I didn't know what to do.
We must be quiet, so Papa can come and find us.
I didn't understand how being quiet would help Papa come to us. It was dark in the room we entered, and the sounds, the ragged breaths and moans, the continuous shouts and cries were loud. Papa had gone outside when they came, went out there with the strange man who'd seemed to know him. I wanted my Papa. I wanted Ian, but he had left with the woman who smelled like sugar and vanilla. A shrill sound pierced the darkness. Mama tugged hard on my hand, yanking me down to where she crouched. She opened a large cupboard behind me as someone screamed. Pots clattered off the floor as Mama tore them from inside the closet.
Get in, Poppy. I need you to get in and be very quiet, okay? I need you to be as silent as a mouse. No matter what. Do you understand?
Looking behind me at the small hole of darkness, I shook my head. Mama wouldn't fit in there.
I want to stay with you.
I'll be right here.
Her hands touched my cheek. Her skin was damp as she turned my head towards her. I need you to be a big girl and listen to me. You have to hide. The high-pitched howl came again, and I clamored for her, clutching at her sides. My fingers dug into the sticky waist of her dress. You have to let go, baby. You need to hide, Poppy. I held tighter, feeling wet warmth coursing down the sides of my face. Mama jerked at the sound of something, a voice. Someone spoke, but my heart pounded too loudly in my ears for me to hear. It sounded like a rushing fall of water, and the nighttime sounds were louder, closer. Then there was a voice again, and Mama, her hands were wetter, stickier. Someone knocked a lamp over somewhere. Glass shattered. Mama yelled as her arms folded around me. The words mushed together, making little sense except for one. Screams. Someone was shrieking. Mama? She was torn from me, her hands sliding down my arms, her fingers catching mine, then slipping. A body crashed into us, me, and I tottered to the side, losing my hold of Mama. Fiery pain sliced across my face, stunning me. I fell back. Hands grabbed me. Hands that were too heavy. Hands that hurt. I screamed. There was a voice again. Somewhere in the darkness, living under the screams. What a pretty little flower. What a pretty poppy. Pick it and watch it bleed. Not so pretty any longer. Poppy. I jerked awake, a scream ringing in my ears, burning my throat as I gasped for air, struggling to move but unable. My arms were trapped against my sides, my legs tangled in a thick warmth. My eyes peeled open, and it took a moment for my surroundings to make sense. I focused on the steady thumping under my cheek as I slowly dug out the thorns of panic and fear. Faint gray light seeped in through the narrow window across from the bed. I wasn't at the inn, being ripped and torn into. I was in the keep, in bed, with a warm, hard chest against my cheek, a hand that continuously smoothed over my hair, a voice that whispered my name over and over, telling me it was okay, promising me that it was safe. I was nestled in his lap, held tightly to his chest, as if he tried to keep the tremors at bay with his hold alone. Castile. Reality came back to me in pieces as the disorientation of the nightmare eased, and I began to realize that he was slowly rocking us. I knew I needed to pull away, should put some distance between us, but something about his embrace was grounding. Something that felt inexplicably right in the aftermath of the blood and terror. Maybe it was because I often woke alone after the nightmares, shaken and terrified. Especially after Ian left for the capital. And even with my screams often waking Tawny, I never allowed such comfort. I'd always been too embarrassed to seek it from my lady's maid. But there wasn't another option now. And it was the first time I'd ever been relieved to have the choice taken from me. I closed my eyes, letting the warmth of Castile's body soak into mine. A hint of shame shifted through me, even though he'd known about the nightmares. Victor had warned him about them, and I knew that Victor had done so not for Castile's benefit, but mine. Sorrow tightened my chest. I missed Victor. Missed him so badly. And waking from these blood-soaked nightmares, the loss was raw. But embarrassment also warmed my skin. How incredibly silly Castile must think me, to be suffering nightmares so many years later. I started to pull away. I'm sorry, I said, wincing at the hoarseness of my voice. Only the gods knew what kind of sounds I must have made to scratch my throat so raw. I didn't mean to wake you.
When I was younger and I left Atlantia for the first time, I saw a craven outside a small village. I'd never seen anything scarier in my entire life. I didn't think there could be anything worse out there. Castile's arms tightened around me. Having been in its state for quite some time, it looked like a walking corpse. It was far more terrifying than anything my imagination could have created when I was a child. And hearing the way it wailed, I swore it would haunt my sleep. And it did, for weeks. Even far away from any craven, I woke in the middle of the night, swearing I heard it screaming. The tremors were subsiding as he curved his hand around the back of my head. But then I was captured, and the worst part? It was my fault. I was still young and foolish. I thought I could solve everything by taking out King Jalara and Queen Ileana myself. I truly believed I could do it. I got close, near enough to make my move. Obviously I failed, and then I learned what true terror was. You asked me earlier what they did to me. They refused me blood, kept me on the edge, giving me just enough to survive, sometimes barely, but the constant low supply affected my ability to heal. Bile crept up my throat, but I said nothing as I stayed in his arms. It takes a long time for that effect to occur, and they knew it. They didn't brand me before they knew the mark would remain. His chest rose against me. When the ones they brought in to feed me were close to dying, no longer able to serve their purpose, they killed them right in front of me, sometimes slowly, putting the same nicks and cuts into their skin until they died. Other times they snapped their necks. But there were times when I was so hungry that I... He swallowed. It was me that tore into their throats and killed them. And they'd leave their bodies in there with me to rot. For days, weeks. Nothing for me to stare at but the person I'd killed. Nothing to think about but what kind of life they'd lived before that moment. And what kind of future I'd stolen from them. Sometimes the bodies would pile up, left in there long after the stench had passed. Oh my gods. My eyes were open but unseeing as I listened to him. Was this also part of the grief he carried with him? If so, I could understand why. All the terrible things he'd done or caused didn't matter in that moment. I couldn't imagine the suffering he must have endured. No one deserved that. Even those whose actions warranted death didn't deserve to be tortured, used, and abused. And to be haunted by nightmares decades later? Centuries later? I didn't think I could deal with 100 years of reliving the night the craven attacked. There was an emptiness to his voice as he continued. And they did things to me. Things that caused reactions I couldn't control. Females, males, they made me... He stopped, and I could feel his head shake. I learned what true fear was. A shuddering breath left me. I'm sorry. I wish... You have nothing to apologize for. It wasn't you, and I don't want that from you. His fingers curled around my hair. I don't want pity. I don't pity you, I told him. And I know I'm not responsible for what happened to you, and neither are you, even if your actions led to your capture. I still feel horrible for what was done to you. I don't want you to feel that. I just want you to know that I had nightmares, Poppy, for years after being freed. I woke in the middle of the night thinking I was still in that cage, shackled by my wrists and ankles. Sometimes things I did after being freed followed me into sleep. His hand slid to my cheek,
guiding my head back so my eyes met his. So I know all about how the past doesn't remain where it should, how it likes to pay visits when you're at your weakest. There is never a need to apologize, nor should you ever feel shame. My heart twisted, even as some of the discomfort lessened. How did you survive what you did?
I don't think you'll like the answer, he said after a moment, looking away. I promised myself that when I escaped, I would eventually watch the life seep from the soulless eyes of Queen Ileana and King Jalara. He dropped his hand. That's how I survived.
I swallowed at the utter coldness of his tone. Revenge, then. When he nodded, I wasn't sure how I was supposed to feel about what he'd said. Was I supposed to think poorly of him? I still didn't know how to reconcile what he'd told me about the Queen and what I knew, what I'd seen.
How did you survive, Poppy?
His gaze swept back to mine, lashes lowered halfway. How have you not let the Night of the Craven attack make you afraid of everything? Because you are fearless, whether it be facing a swarm of Craven, staring into the eyes of a wolven, or when you push back at me, even knowing what I am. His question caught me off guard, as did the knowledge that he saw me as fearless. It's not that I'm without fear. I do fear things. Interest sparked in his golden eyes. I don't believe that. There was no way I'd admit to him that I feared myself more than I could ever fear a Craven, wolven, or even him. I survived because I refused to ever be helpless again. That kept me from caving to the fear. That's what helped me push through the pain of training with Victor, the aches and bruises. I thought of the brand on Castile's thigh, the pain he must have endured for something like that to scar when he healed so easily. I can understand how the need for revenge helped you survive. His head tilted as his lashes lifted, revealing his bright, intense gaze.
Is that how you're surviving right now? Picturing all the ways you will kill me?
No, I wasn't thinking that at all. Maybe I should be, but I wasn't. Slipping out of his embrace, I scooted over to my side of the bed. I guess you'll just have to wait and find out. A half grin appeared, revealing the dimple in his right cheek. Too soon, it faded.
Do you remember anything from the nightmare?
I'm really trying not to think about it, I admitted, tugging the heavy blanket up to my chest. He reclined back on an elbow, and my gaze dipped from his eyes to the lean length of his stomach.
You were speaking in your sleep.
What?
That jerked my traitorous eyes back to his.
Castile nodded.
You were saying something that reminded me of a disturbing nursery rhyme, to be honest. Something about a pretty flower.
The moment those words left his mouth, the nightmare came back in a rush of startling clarity. What a pretty poppy. Pick it and watch it bleed, I murmured. Not so pretty any longer.
Yes, that!
An eyebrow rose.
And it's as disturbing as it was the first time around.
I can't believe I was saying that.
Neither could I when I heard it, he commented. Has someone said that to you before?
My brows furrowed as I shook my head. I don't know. Sometimes the nightmares I have of that night aren't exactly how things happened, but I don't remember ever hearing that before. I curled my fingers around the collar of the nightgown, and I try not to think about it when I wake up. I could have heard it before and forgotten. Sometimes it's
disorienting, he finished for me.
I nodded, sifting through what I remembered.
Nausea rose as I did. I could almost smell the blood, feel my mother's wet hand against.
Someone spoke to my mother. In my nightmare, there was a voice right before the Craven reached us. My eyes widened. I think it was the one who said the thing about the flower, and my mother responded, but I... Frustration ate at me as I tried to make sense of the garbled word I'd thought she said. It could have been more than one word. I could almost see her lips moving, but it could also be a false memory. I can't remember.
Maybe it will come to you later.
Maybe, I sighed. But I don't even know if what I heard was real.
It might not be. Sometimes things in the past seem to overlap one another in dreams. My capture often gets mixed up with Malik's.
He eased onto his back, his eyes on the exposed beams of the ceiling.
The night of the Craven attack isn't the only ordeal you've been through.
My fingers slipped from the neckline of my gown. I knew at once that he was referring to the Duke. Heat crept up my throat, and I hated the shame that caused it, the humiliation of what he did to me that I'd been unable to stop. And as I'd just learned, if anyone knew how that felt, it was Castile. He'd had it far worse than me, though.
How did you find out about the Duke?
I never told you.
About his lessons.
Tension bracketed his mouth.
Duke Tierman was feared, but not respected among his royal guards. It took only the smallest of compulsions for one of them to share what they knew.
My mouth dried at the knowledge that he'd used compulsion. But it wasn't that he'd done it that caused the reaction. It was the reminder of what he could do. That kind of ability was frightening and awe-inspiring. And not using it whenever he could was so impressive. I doubted that I'd have that kind of strength of character. I frowned. Was I actually complimenting his character? The man who had lied, kidnapped me, and held me captive?
I obviously needed more rest.
The thing you repeated in your sleep, he said, jarring me from my thoughts.
It sounded like something the Duke might have said to you. It's perverse enough for that bastard.
Castile was right. It was perverse enough for Duke Tierman. The voice had sounded familiar. Could he be right? Was it the two ordeals overlapping? There were times I didn't quite remember everything from the time spent in his private offices, when the pain of the canings had left me in a semi-lucid state.
How often did he do it?
Castile asked quietly.
Engage in his lessons.
I clamped my mouth shut. Castile turned his head toward me.
I know what he did. I know that he wasn't always alone, and I know that sometimes it only lasted a half hour. Other times the god lost track of the time.
His features were sharp and stark.
And I know that he preferred to use the cane against bare flesh.
Pressure clamped down on my chest at the image of Lord Mazin holding my hands to the table, preventing me from covering my chest, stopping me from any shred of dignity. Whenever he was disappointed in me, I replied roughly.
He was often disappointed.
His lips thinned. If I had known that Lord Mazin joined him, he would have been staked to that wall right alongside the Duke. I lifted my gaze to his. I'm glad you didn't. If you had, then I wouldn't have gotten to see the look on his face when I sliced off his hand and then his head. Castile stared at me, the corners of his lips curving up. His lips parted and I saw a hint of his fangs. The dimple in his right cheek appeared. And then his left. I felt a curling motion in my stomach.
So incredibly violent, my princess.
The curl moved even lower. I'm not your princess. He chuckled as he turned his head away.
You think you can go back to sleep?
He asked.
We probably have a couple more hours before Kiran or someone will be banging on this door to make sure you haven't found a way to murder me in the middle of the night.
I rolled my eyes.
As soon as the storm blows over, we'll leave for Spessa's End.
I knew very little about Spessa's End, only that it was a small town similar to New Haven, sitting on the edge of Stygian Bay. It was the closest town to Pompeii, the last Atlantean stronghold during the war. One of the priestesses had told me that Stygian Bay was the gateway to the temples of eternity, overseen by Rain, the god of common men and endings. She'd described the bay as black as the night sky. Lying down, I turned onto my side, but I didn't sleep. Instead, I stared at the dying flames, thinking of the Duke, the nightmare, and the knowledge that there would be little chance of escape between here and Spessa's End.
You're not sleeping, are you? Castile asked some time later.
How did you know?
You were rocking over there like you're a babe being wooed to sleep.
I am not. I swallowed a groan as I realized that I was doing exactly that. I stilled my lower half. Sorry. It's an old habit from when I was a child. I usually can't sleep after the nightmares, I admitted after a few seconds.
Is that when you sneak off to explore the city?
Since he couldn't see me, I grinned. Sometimes. It all depended on how late it was.
Well, there's no city for you to explore, he said, and I felt the bed shift as he moved. I'm confident you remember how adept I am as a sleep aid.
Sparks danced over my skin. Of course I remembered the night in the Blood Forest, when he'd slipped his hand between my thighs, and for the first time in my life I'd discovered what pure pleasure was. I tried to block those images. That's not necessary.
That's disappointing.
That's your problem. I sucked in a sharp breath as I suddenly felt him against my back. I twisted. What are you doing?
Holding you,
he answered, curving an arm over my waist. My heart bounced like a child's ball.
That's all I'm doing, he cut in. I sometimes find that being close to another helps me fall asleep.
I wondered how he'd gained that knowledge. Instead, I asked, then why didn't you suggest that in the Blood Forest?
Because this is not nearly as fun or interesting as what I did then, he replied. I do have that diary around here somewhere. You know, the one with the throbbing
I know exactly which journal you're speaking of, and that won't be necessary either.
That's also disappointing.
He settled his head behind mine as he all but pulled me down.
I need my sleep, and that's not going to happen when it feels like I'm on a boat.
He paused.
A rickety one.
I wasn't rocking that much, I denied, wiggling to put space between us.
I wouldn't advise that, he said, voice gruff as his arm tightened.
Why?
Squirm a few more inches lower, and I'm sure you'll find out why.
My eyes popped wide as I grew very, very still. Was he aroused? Simply because he was lying in bed next to me? Was that all it took? After what we'd just talked about? I bit down on my lower lip. Sometimes all it took for me was to look at him, and I'd feel a certain way, knowing that he could experience all the want and desire after what he went through was a relief. What he felt now had nothing to do with what had been done to him. What I felt when he touched me had nothing to do with how I felt when the Duke placed his hands on me. I knew that. And I shouldn't be shocked to discover that Castile was attracted to me. That had been abundantly clear, unless that too had been an act. No, I didn't think it was an act. There'd be no reason to force the attraction now, especially not when it was just,
I can practically hear the wheels of your brain turning, princess, he said.
Why do you believe I'm thinking about anything? I demanded.
Because you couldn't be stiffer. Sleep, Poppy. We have a lot to talk about tomorrow.
The marriage, our future. Two things that were irrelevant, because the first was never going to happen, so there could be no future for us. Besides, how was I supposed to sleep with him curled around me like one of those small, fluffy animals that lived in trees near the Capitol? What were they called? I couldn't remember. I'd only seen drawings of them in a children's book I'd once found in the Athenaeum. They were cute and looked soft, but Victor had once told me that they were vicious little creatures.
Do you know what the fluffy animals are called that live in the trees near the Capitol? I asked.
What?
The ones that hang onto the limbs, I explained. They're fluffy and cute, but are supposedly vicious.
Dear gods, do I even want to know why you're thinking of the tree bears?
Tree bear? My brow puckered. That's the name?
Poppy,
he sighed. I rolled my eyes. You remind me of a tree bear.
I would tell you that I'm offended, but that requires speaking, which means neither of us would be sleeping.
Whatever, I muttered. Lying there stiffly, I debated snatching the meat knife and stabbing him in the arm with it. That seemed like a bit of an overreaction, but it was one I'd enjoy, at least in the moment. I didn't know exactly when or how long it took, but somewhere between staring at the knife and doing everything not to rock, my eyelids grew heavy, and I did eventually sleep. And I did not dream.
Chapter 8. The next time I saw Castile, I was going to shove the stupid knife so far into his chest he would have to dig it out. Glaring at the door, guarded from the outside, I swallowed a shout of frustration and anger. With the exception of Delano arriving with lunch, I'd been locked up in this room all day, alone. And going absolutely stir-crazy. Castile was gone when I woke, and that had been a welcomed discovery, since waking up in his arms was not something I needed to experience again. The memories of such were already hard enough to forget. But hours later, as the snow fell steadily and the wind howled outside the narrow window, whatever gratitude I'd felt had shriveled up and died. Delano had stood guard outside nearly the entire day. I knew because the last time I'd pounded on the door, he'd answered through the heavy wood. He'd replied in virtually the same way each time I demanded to be let out.
No one wishes to chase you through a snowstorm. I'd rather be gutted by the prince, so no. The prince will return soon.
My favorite was when I'd said that I just wanted some fresh air.
Nothing personal, but there is literally no way I would trust you enough to crack this door open to allow even an inch of fresh air to enter your chamber.
How was that not personal? I started toward the door, planning to bang my fist off it until the whole keep came running. The door suddenly swung open as Delano rushed inside, hand on the hilt of his sword. He drew up short. Eyes bright as he checked me over and scanned the room.
Are you okay?
He demanded. Delano had the kind of face that often tricked you. Except for the nearly constant crease between his fair brows, there was a boyishness to his features, as if he would be grinning the second he thought you weren't looking. But in that moment, with the hard set to his jaw and the steeliness in his eyes I'd never seen before, he looked as if he were a breath away from lopping off someone's head.
Other than being angry about being trapped in here?
Yes.
His eyes narrowed.
You weren't yelling.
My brows lifted. Not externally.
Did you hear me yelling?
Delano's head tilted.
What do you mean by not externally?
I was probably screaming internally for being locked in here.
So you weren't screaming?
No, not out loud. I crossed my arms. His already light skin seemed paler.
I thought I heard you calling my name.
The crease between his brows deepened.
Screaming for help.
letting go of his sword, he ran a hand through his nearly white blonde hair.
It must have been the wind.
Or your guilty conscience.
Probably the wind.
I started toward him. There it was, a flash of a grin.
Sorry to interrupt.
Interrupt what? I'm stuck in this room. What could... I shrieked as the door closed and locked.
Now I am yelling.
It's the wind, he yelled back through the door. I stomped my foot once, and then twice, instead of giving in to the urge to really scream. Throwing myself onto the bed, I pictured all the different places I could stab Delano. But then I felt a little bad about that. It wasn't his fault. It was Castile's. So I pictured putting as many holes in him as I could until I started to doze. I didn't fight it. Being unconscious was far better than rage pacing. I had no idea how long I slept, whether it was minutes or hours, but when I opened my bleary eyes, a patchwork quilt had been draped over my legs, and I saw that I wasn't alone. Across from the bed sat Kieran, in the same chair as the night before, practically in the same position, one booted foot resting on a bent knee.
Good afternoon,
he said, as I blinked slowly, looking between him and the quilt.
The quilt wasn't me. That was Cass.
He'd been in here while I slept.
That son of a... Though, I'm glad you finally woke up. I was going to give you another 5 minutes before I risked life and limb to wake you. Unlike Cass, watching you sleep is not something I find all that entertaining.
Castile watched me sleep? Wait, how long had Kieran been sitting there?
What are you doing in here? I rasped. Other than wondering exactly what choices I made in my life that led me to this exact moment?
Kieran asked. My eyes narrowed. Yes, other than that.
Since I figured Delano would like a break and wondered if you might be hungry, I'm hoping that you are, because I would like to eat too.
My stomach immediately decided that yes, it would like some food, and grumbled loudly.
I'll take that as a yes.
Feeling my cheeks flush, I shoved the blanket off and stood. Am I actually allowed to leave this room?
Of course.
My brows lifted. You say that as if I'm asking a stupid question. I've been locked in here all day.
If you could be trusted not to run, then perhaps you wouldn't be locked in here.
Maybe if you weren't holding me captive, I wouldn't have to try and escape.
Good point,
I blinked.
But it is what it is.
Kieran arched a brow.
Do you wish to leave the room and eat, or would you rather sit here and stew? Your choice.
My choice? I almost laughed. I need to use the bathing chamber first.
Take your time. I'll just sit here and stare at nothing now.
Rolling my eyes, I started to turn, and then my stupid mouth opened. Where is His Highness?
Highness? Man, I bet Cass loves being referred to as that.
Kieran chuckled.
You miss him already?
Oh, yes. That's exactly why I'm asking. He grinned.
He's been speaking with Alistair and several of the others in town. If he wasn't the Prince of Atlantia with all his princely duties, I'm sure he'd be here.
His pale eyes glimmered,
watching you sleep.
Thank the gods that he has something to pass his time with, then, I muttered. Ignoring that, I hurried into the bathing chamber. I took care of my needs and then grabbed the brush from the small vanity. My hair was a mess from sleeping on it, and there was a good chance that I tore half of it out while trying to get the knots out. Once I finished, I placed the brush back and then looked in the small mirror, tilting my head to the side. I wasn't looking at the scars, though I thought they seemed less noticeable somehow. Could be the lighting. Rather, it was my eyes that I stared at. They were green, passed down from my father to Ian and me. My mother's were brown, and I thought of how the Atlanteans had golden or hazel-colored eyes. Had my mother's been a plain shade of brown, or had they been a golden brown?
Was I just assuming that all Atlanteans had some shade of gold in their eyes? Turning my head to the side, I saw that the bite mark was now just a pale purple bruise. It looked like one of the love bites I'd read about in Miss Willa Collins' diary. I flushed as I quickly braided my hair. Once completed, I tossed the plait over my shoulder, hoping the thick tail would stay in place, concealing the mark. My gaze lowered to my hands. I have a lot of blood on my hands. As angry as I was at Castile, his words still haunted me, as did what he had shared about the time he'd spent as a captive. He didn't deserve that. Part of me still couldn't believe that he'd taken ownership for Victor and the others, and I couldn't help but wonder if their deaths were part of what stained his soul. I also wondered if what he hadn't been able to control when he was held also darkened his soul. If so, that sat even heavier on my heart, and I wasn't sure what to do with any of that. Horrific things had been done to him. He'd done terrible things. Neither canceled out the other. Kieran was at least standing when I exited the bathing chamber. He faced the banked fire, and I wondered if that was as far as he'd moved. "Do you ever get bored?" I asked. "With what?" he replied, sounding as disinterested as possible. "With standing around and waiting for me. It seems like you're tasked with doing so quite often."
"It's actually an honor to guard what the prince values so highly," he replied. "And since I'm never quite sure what you're going to do from one second to the next, it's not even remotely boring. That is, except when you're sleeping."
I made a closed mouth sound of annoyance as my heart immediately went to war with my brain over why I was considered something the prince valued. My heart